I grew up in Gorham and ended up going to school in Portland from like 72 to 74. So suddenly found myself in a city, you know, not taking school buses to get home. So I kind of had a lot more flexibility after school than I did when I was living in Gorham and going to school in Gorham. It was pretty isolated, I'd say. I read about, you know, certain things happening in New York City or whatever. Had seen like an article or two in like either Life or Look magazine. I had a cousin who was the same age, who had been given a copy of Everything You Always Wanted to Know About Sex But Were Afraid to Ask. So, I was certainly aware that there were other homosexuals out there somewhere. I had no idea, like, how to go about meeting them or where they were, you know. And I tried to navigate through, like, as a freshman in high school, tried to navigate through, like, sort of this mating ritual that boys and girls went through in high school, and that all didn't work. So, you know, with kids my own age, so I kind of ended up, and I don't know kind of how I learned where or how. I was actually thinking about it, but I think, like, I probably read something, and it may have been from, like, Dr. David Rubin's book there, which was like the bestseller at the time, and in retrospect, extremely homophobic. But I mean, it talked about, like, you know, homosexual men like shoving light bulbs up their asses and things like that. But I think there was also a thing about cruising, and almost kind of like a how-to guide, you know, in public places. And I think I probably picked up some pointers from that. Yeah. Well, that was probably the last thing that the author wanted to have happen, was to have, like, you know, 14, 15-year-old boys, like, learn how to cruise.
Yeah.
By reading his, you know, his book.
Yeah. And so you had some experiences cruising in Portland?
Yeah, I mean, initially, I think the first time that I was really conscious of it was in Portland. And there was this guy, and I mean, I still remember what he looked like, and it's, you know, 40 years ago now. Yeah. Close to it. It was on Congress Street, and I may have seen him in a store. He saw me in a store, and I was conscious that he was watching me and kind of following me throughout the store. And then I would stop and he would stop. And it was kind of like this, like, typical public cruising kind of ritual, you know, like, you know, he'd, you know, stop and look at something, and then I'd stop and look at something, and then I'd move, you know, 3 feet, and he'd move 3 feet, and, you know, it was kind of like mimicking behavior, sort of, I guess, what kind of happens in the animal kingdom. Then he followed me kind of down Congress Street into another store. So I kind of figured out at that point that, okay, he's trying to make something happen, but I wasn't exactly sure how to make it happen, and I was a little scared. And actually, I think we ended up in Porches, and, a salesman came up, and probably, in retrospect, he was probably gay, and probably figured out, like, what was going on. Okay, like, this 30-year-old, like, guy with a leather vest on, like, hawking this, like, 14-year-old boy, and he came up and asked me if I needed help, and that kind of put an end to that episode. But it kind of, like, taught me the ritual, you know, and so that was kind of how it started. But then I guess I became much more kind of, had a heightened awareness, so that when I went into, like, public restrooms, I was aware that there was, like, this suddenly aware there was this, all the sexual activity going on, and the people weren't just hanging out in there because they were waiting for to go to the bathroom. They were hanging out in there because they were waiting to have sex. And probably the most notorious one was at Bradley's in Westbrook, but it was like every department store, every public library, every bus station. I mean, every restroom everywhere was kind of like, you know, ripe with opportunities. And then I ended up going to, transferring to school my sophomore year, so I would have been like 15, to Portland. So instead of it being like a big project to get to Portland, you know, or like have to trying to figure out some way to get my mother to take me there and leave me there or ride my bike there. I was there every day on the kind of Western Prom end of Portland, you know, which was a short walk to downtown. A world of possibilities opened up. I think I remember one time like picking up somebody or being picked up by somebody in the cemetery.
Yeah.
Which ironically is like where my soccer team used to like jog, you know, and would run through the cemetery and up through the Western Prom and stuff, and you know, we're probably cruised by lots of guys in retrospect. But yeah, I ended up hooking up with somebody there at least once on one occasion, and we went back someplace. I think it was the first time I fucked somebody, and took me back to like some cellar someplace. I don't know if we may have broken into a house. I don't remember. But I know we ended up in the basement through some nefarious means. We didn't enter through like a front door or something. We were in some basement in the Western Prom. Fucking on a dirt floor in a cellar or something. So it was pretty hot.
And how old are you then?
15, 16.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, all my activities, all my sexual activities were in public places. They weren't with, like, friends. They weren't with kids that I went to school with. They weren't with kids my own age, for the most part. It was, like, for the most part, older dudes, you know, that I met in bathrooms. And almost exclusively never, like, said a word to or exchanged a word with. You know, it's just silent.
Yeah.
So it was years before I actually like spoke to somebody that I had sex with.
Huh.
You know.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Notes written on pieces of toilet paper and slipped through a glory hole or something, or, you know, foot tapping under a stall. You know, there were all sorts of kind of signals that somebody was interested in having sex. And became like really receptive and intuitive about knowing what they were. I really like, and I suppose it was, I don't know if it was because it was the first time, but I really like the first time I had sex was like, and that I actually had an orgasm, was in a tea room. So yeah, the kind of whole tea room culture really appealed to me. And then when I moved to Providence, you know, I kind of sought out sex in the same scenarios for the most part, even though there were more options in Providence. The tea room seemed efficient. There was a bar, I think it was called Roland's, mm-hmm. On Cumberland Avenue. And I used to walk down there after school and just hang out at the bar. And I mean, I was obviously a kid, you know. I was probably 16, 17, and I drank Coke, you know, Coca-Cola at the bar, and with other diehard people that are at a bar at 2 or 3 in the afternoon, so I hung out there a little bit, ended up befriending or being befriended by a guy that was a bartender / performer there, and so that was actually the first gay bar that I went to. And there was, they actually had a light that came on, like a warning light that came on if the cops were showing up. But I never had any, I guess I was just lucky, or else cops didn't really make it a priority then, but I never had, not until years and years later, ever had an issue with cops. Mm. Never had, well, in Maine, never had anything negative happen. I did have one kind of really negative experience from, like, a public sex episode, but that was in Providence when I was about 18, but, you know, never had any, anything bad happen. And I used to think about it, I mean, like, you know, I could, like, shove my dick through this glory hole and there could be, like, some psychotic person on the other side with a knife, you know, just cuts it off, you know. But, I mean, there was a, probably the whole kind of danger thing about getting caught, having sex while my mom was, like, shopping in the store, you know, it was probably added to the kind of thrill of the whole thing. Yeah, because, I mean, it wasn't happening with, like, people that I was intimate with. It wasn't happening with my friends. It wasn't happening around me. I mean, all the guys that I was attracted to either were chasing girls all the time, or we didn't quite know how to navigate things to the next level. And in retrospect, there was probably, like, at least two or three guys that I was, like, really good friends with that it probably could have gone to a sexual level, but we didn't know how to do that safely without risking our friendships or being, like, you know, called queer or something if we made the wrong move.
Yeah.
So, it was much easier with strangers. And older guys were the easiest ones of all, you know. I mean, being, you know, 15 years old with a big dick was kind of a hot commodity.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, like, there's a power relationship there that I think a lot of people assume that you would have been being taken advantage of or whatever.
No, I mean, I was always on the pursuit. Yeah. You know, I was the one that was, like, seeking it. And they were, too, but I wasn't being coerced at all.
Yeah.
You know, and the whole thing about, like, well, it can't be consensual. You know, there's this inherent lack of consent if somebody's 15 and somebody's 40. I never felt that. I mean, I was willingly, aggressively seeking it out. And in some respects, I kind of felt like I had more power than they did in some respects, because I had the power to either, like, approve or deny. And once I got off, I just walked away. You know, I just kind of left, you know. And I remember a couple of older guys being kind of, like, really desperately trying to, like, either get my phone number or give me their number or make things last longer or make the connection last longer. And I just had to go because my mom was waiting in the parking lot or whatever, you know, or I had to, you know, or she was going to pick me up after school. So I had to get back, you know, I had to walk back to Waynefleet. So, yeah, I mean, it was fun. I mean, in some respects, it took a lot of time, you know, but it takes a lot of time now for people to spend hours on Manhunt or something trying to make a hookup, you know?
Yeah.
I used to try to imagine, like, add up, like, how many hours I'd actually spent in men's rooms, you know? That was extraordinary, you know, the number of hours. And you could usually always score. It might just take a while, you know? And it would get interrupted a lot. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, there were actually people that used bathrooms as bathrooms,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And the best ones were the ones that had, like, and, like, I think Porches didn't have, I think Grant's, you had to use a dime, to get in. So you could hear if somebody was coming in because you'd hear like the coin drop in the lock and the somebody turning the lock. Bradley's, which was in Westbrook, that had it was a dime. Porteous, I don't think, had one. I think it was just, you know, you could just open the door. So that wasn't quite as secure. But the other ones, you had like a little bit of warning if somebody was coming in. Yeah, the first time I fucked somebody, I guess, actually was in a men's room, but I didn't realize that I fucked them. I stuck my, like, dick through a glory hole, and it came back, and it was, like, shit covered. And I was like,
how did this happen?
Well, I couldn't, I'm like, how did my dick get all shitty? I had no idea, and I thought, you know, that I had somehow, like, managed to kind of stick it down into the toilet, and there was, like, shit floating in the toilet or something. And, I mean, I just had no clue. And then I realized, oh, okay. I just, like, shoved it up some guy's ass, you know? So now I'm, like, in this predicament. Like, I've got this, like, shit-covered dick. And how do I get myself clean,
yeah.
You know? And I ended up going to another men's room. That wasn't like the popular one.
Yeah.
Just to kind of like wash up, you know, and abandon my underwear. so, yeah. I think the library was probably, you know, another spot. I don't remember actually ever picking anybody up there in Portland, the Portland Library, but, you know, Congress Street had, you know, two department stores. At least Grants and Porches, and they were like right next to each other. And there was the library, and then there was like the Western Prom area. There was Rollins, which was on Cumberland Avenue. So, and then, I mean, even outside of Portland, kind of any department store, you know, Zara's, Bradley's, you know, the Kmart's and Walmart's of the day. They had men's rooms, Beach Ridge Speedway. I mean, any place, you know, any place that had like a bathroom was ripe for opportunity. Rest areas, picnic areas that had like men's rooms, you know, Old Orchard Beach, Crescent Beach.
Mm.
I mean, kind of anywhere there was a bathroom.
Yeah,
was a possibility.
Yeah, and this was in the 70s, right? So
yeah, so like. You know, I was, like, my kind of active, like, time in Maine, as far as public sex, was 71 to 74, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then I left to go to school, and then in Providence, and then would kind of revisit my former haunts, you know, when I would go back home for vacations.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I kind of actually, one of the reasons why I chose to go to school where I did is because I knew there was like some really hot tea rooms in Providence.
Mm.
And I kind of like, you know, shaded my, it was either there or going to Orono, you know, and I'm like, okay, like there's some really hot tea rooms in Providence and there may not be some hot tea rooms in Orono. So, yeah, Ivy League versus University of Maine. Now we'll go for the tea rooms, you know? It really had more to do with that than on the quality of the education I was going to receive. And in retrospect, I was probably pretty lucky, you know, that nothing bad ever happened, you know? I mean, I was a kid. I was pretty naive. I was 14, 15. And I think... It used to surprise me kind of that people were like so oblivious to what was going on.
Mm.
Like here's like this public restroom in a public place and 99 or whatever percent of the people walking by that door just assumed, okay, it's a bathroom and had no idea what was going on behind there. I don't know if, I can't imagine that cops were like completely oblivious. I mean, it was pretty obvious. You go into a men's room and there's a hole in the stall and you know, stuff scrawled all over the partitions, you know, of a sexual nature. And, but there didn't seem to be any interest or motivation to kind of crack down on that by the cops. And I think as long as things were kind of like beneath the surface, people were all right with it. It was only, because this is only a few years really after Stonewall. So, I mean, it's, you know, I think once kind of the gay liberation movement and started kind of coming to the forefront and becoming more in your face, and people started becoming more aware that, oh yeah, there's this whole like culture of people out there, that's when law enforcement started getting more interested in kind of cracking down on public sex. I mean, I don't think they had undercover cops doing sting operations at Grants and Porches in the 1970s, you know? Whereas they probably did have stuff like that, you know, in the 80s or 90s, you know, especially once AIDS hysteria started, you know, coming up, that somehow sex was, like, equated with, like, murder. But back then, it was just kind of innocent and fun and it was like a kind of secret culture just beneath the surface.
Yeah.
I loved it. It was great. It was easy, you know? It was easy. It was easy for, like, young queer kid to, like, figure out how to be able to have sex without getting parents involved, without getting friends and school and stuff like that, without risking your reputation in those sorts of environments, you know, just to be able to go and have sex pretty much efficiently and successfully almost any time you wanted to. Before computers, before Manhunt, before internet, before any of that stuff that, you know, I try to think, like, if I was a kid today, you know, like, and had access to, like, a computer, you know, I mean, that's a different form of public sex, I guess. If it would be as easy as it was then, because those public sort of places are pretty much gone for the most part. You know, if I was suddenly to be dropped off in Portland right now as a 53-year-old guy, and I wanted to have sex in a public sort of way or just kind of make a hookup, I wouldn't know where to go, you know? Because those department stores are gone, you know? The tea rooms are gone. The fine art cinema and places like that are gone. So I don't know what kids do nowadays. Cruise Manhunt, I guess. I don't know.